fucking Shia's new movie? Have you seen the trailer for that yet? Mm-mm. Good Lord.
I don't watch trailers or anything. Although that sounded cool.
Oh, my God. Except Jai Courtney's barely in the trailer, so I don't know. This might be the year for Jai Courtney, though, 2017.
He's going to get something this year. What's up? This is Movies on Up. There are no clean getaways. There is a co-host seated right across from me, my co-pilot, Mr. Dave Bissella.
So fresh and so clean, clean.
That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. There are no clean getaways is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can email it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guess at us on the Twitter @moviesonup. And if you are correct, and if we choose you, some mail carrier will drive a prize package to your residence full of all sorts of wonderment. And all you have to do is figure out what movie There Are No Clean Getaways comes from. This week, Hailee Steinfeld comes back to theaters with The Edge of 17, which we had talked a little bit about in our fall preview, but that was pre-trailer for this movie. It looks like a little bit different after having seen the trailers of what I thought it was going to be. It looks like your classic teen sex comedy.
Female point of view, though.
Sure.
Which we don't see a lot of.
So yeah, classic is probably not a good word for that since it is from the female perspective, which we don't get a lot. I am happy that it's her. I think she's great.
It looks funny. It looks legitimately funny.
Which got Dave to thinking about teen sex comedies that are funny and legitimately funny, being that we couldn't necessarily find one from a female
In hindsight, thinking about it, Easy A would have made sense.
Yeah. It would have.
That's a female-led sex comedy that's actually pretty decent.
It is.
But I've wanted to do this since we started the podcast.
Yeah. And by this, of course, Dave means Sean Anders' 2008 Sex Drive, starring Josh Zuckerman, Clark Duke, Amanda Crew, and Cyclops James Marsden. It opened back on October 17th of 2008 to $3.6 million domestically, which was good for ninth place that week. Max Payne, Beverly Hills Chihuahua, The Secret Life of Bees, W, and Eagle Eye were your heavy-hitting top five that week. Sex Drive went on to gross $8.4 million domestically, which puts it in 4,629th place on the all-time list, one spot below this 1992 horror gem that could have been featured in our last week's list.
I don't know what last week's list was.
It was the Doctor Strange list. Doctors.
Oh, Dr. Giggles.
Dr. Giggles it is. And one spot ahead of the Gene Hackman, Ellen Burstyn film that literally comes by twice in a lifetime.
Twice in a lifetime?
It is twice in a lifetime. Very good, Dave. Two for two. Other pod-relevant movies in that general area. MacGruber at 46.14, Leprechaun and Blue Velvet at 46.06 and 46.07, respectively. And up there at 46.03... Death at a Funeral, but not the James Marsden one.
The
2007.
Oh, the original.
Yeah, exactly, the original. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of where Sex Drive.
Can I just something sticks out there?
Yeah.
Sex Drive, and MacGruber.
Yes.
If I had to make a list of like the best comedies of the last 15 years, they're both on there. I think both of them are legit comedies that are some of the funniest movies I've ever seen. And they didn't make anything.
I think for different reasons. I think MacGruber suffered from being an SNL movie that seemed like it was going to be a one-trick pony. Obviously, it ended up being really, really good. At least Dave and I think so. This movie, I think, just looked like it could have been any of the teen sex comedies, which had sort of made a resurgence since American Pie.
Well,
it just looked like it was going to be one of them.
This is like 10 years after American Pie.
And I think people were fatigued of it.
Yeah, but Superbad was 07, if I remember correct. It wasn't a super huge genre at the time. And we were seeing a lot more R-rated comedies. This is in the peak Apatow area of comedy, where you have these R-rated raunchy comedies. So I don't think it was pulling the adult audience, because why are the adults going to see a high school sex comedy when we have knocked up 40-year-old right. virgin. We have adult sex comedies now. And then you had Superbad, which I think is the best high school sex movie of all time. And this, it was more grounded in, I hate to say, like, it was more grounded in seriousness, I guess. It didn't rely on gags. Whereas the trailer for this, you could tell there were gags involved. I think just timing is weird. If this would have come out in like 99 or 2000, I think it would have been massive. Yeah, or even if it came out a couple years later, because we were fatigued by the American Pie sequels.
Right.
They were no longer high school sex comedies. They were like young adult sex comedies. So I think timing-wise, it came out at an odd spot.
I do think to a certain extent movies are cyclical, and it'll last for a while. You may have a lot of... We've had a rash of zombie movies. We had a rash of vampire movies, just to stick in the horror genre. Time travel. Last year, I think there were a few Android movies. So it just comes around. Now, those are... Some of them specifically are kind of like micro cycles with a genre a little bit beefier, like sex comedies. They've always been around. But I think specifically these teen-led ones where... I'm not going to say that American Pie was the first one that was like, here's high schoolers doing it. And Porky's was before that.
Yeah, but it rebirthed it.
Right, yeah. It showed that the genre was coming again. And then from there on out, I think Hollywood took the hint that those movies can make money, even at an R rating, and they made a ton of them. And like you said, this one I think was on the backside of that wave. And people just, I think, stopped caring. Because there had been so many that were not good that... You just now assume that all these other ones are going to be not good as well. And I will admit, I didn't rush out to go see this because I thought the same thing.
I don't remember when I did not see it in theaters. I think it was a random, like, I looked kind of funny. I'll check it out when it's on DVD. And I was obsessed with it from the moment I saw it. It's a really, really good movie. I think it's really good. I think it's really funny. And when it comes to stuff like that, I think being a good, funny movie is a lot different than being a funny movie. Because you see movies like Wedding Crashers and like Old School, like in that. Those were funny movies that did well, but I don't think they were particularly good movies. Where this, it's all strung together like a real movie. Like it's not written and designed as just let's string a bunch of sex jokes and gags together. There are a lot of gags. There are a lot of bits in this movie. But they fit. And the story never stops moving. Everything goes from one thing to the other. Even American Pie fell short of that. Like, you would have your gags that are... They're just there for comedic purpose. They have nothing to do with the plot. Whereas this, everything moves it along. Everything takes the character somewhere.
And maybe that has something to do with the guy that's directing it. It was also the guy that wrote it in Sean Anders. And he's certainly carved himself out a pretty nice niche as a solid comedic voice. He's one that I think is doing more things and should get more credit than he does get. I feel like he should be a little bit bigger of a name than he is. He was a screenwriter for Hot Tub Time Machine, which I thought was really, really good. Surprising. I think the same could be said for We're the Millers. Both
I really
movies
like
that,
We're the Millers.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I enjoyed The Time Machine as well, and those were both written by him. He wrote Daddy's Home, and I haven't seen that one yet, but he's going to be writing and directing the sequel to that. He did Horrible Bosses, too. He's had some hits and misses, but I think overall...
If you look at his misses, they're major studio movies. Yes. Like, they're not just these ideas of his that fell flat. Like, he took Sex Drive and then turned it into a lucrative career. Like, just from a directing standpoint, he went from Sex Drive to That's My Boy, which was Adam Sandler when he was still bankable, and Andy Samberg when they were trying to make him a bankable star. Then Horrible Bosses 2, which was a sequel to a successful comedy. Then Will Ferrell, Marky Mark, and Daddy's Home. And then his writing, he did Sex Drive, he did She's Out of My League, that Jay Baruchel movie,
yeah.
Hot Tub Time Machine, We're the Millers, Dumb and Dumber 2, Horrible Bosses, and Daddy's Home. So, like, even his misses, they're misses from maybe a quality standpoint, but most of them are making money. He's making safe studio comedies, which I wouldn't consider Sex Drive that.
No.
No, which is why it's a bummer. I feel like he's making the kind of movies he has to make in order to get himself in a position to make another sex drive. I don't mean sequel, I mean another...
another movie like that. Though I thought We Are the Millers, I didn't feel like that was necessarily a studio comedy,
no.
You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I liked that.
It didn't seem cookie cutter to me.
No, I just think that was... we were Sudeikis'd out when that came out, I think. But it was good. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked the kid in that movie from Son of Rambo. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. There's supposed to be a sequel, but I don't think we need it.
I didn't see him attached to the sequel at all, which, to be honest with you, I think is a black mark against that movie, because I like what this guy's doing. And specifically what I think I like about him is that he seems to do ensemble comedy well. This movie was absolutely the sum of its parts, and its parts were great, and they all were utilized very, very well. Same thing with We Are the Millers. It's not just
Sudeikis.
Suds.
Yeah.
Everybody is funny
Emma
in that
Roberts.
Movie. Right.
Jennifer Aniston. Then you have Ed Helms in a small part.
And Ben Folds.
Yeah. And this, to get back to Sex Drive, you have your three leads. You have Josh Zuckerman, Amanda Crew, and Clark
the Duke.
Who I love Clark Duke.
I'm a fan.
I want Anders to make more movies because
that's how we get Clark Duke. Yes.
But
Hot Tub Time Machine.
They're very competent leads, and they're really good. And they're deep enough as characters to keep you involved. Like, there's stuff going on. There's the friendship between Felicia and Ian. There's the friendship between Lance and Ian. There's the unspoken thing between Felicia and Lance. Like, there's all sorts of stuff going on there. But then you have James Marsden come in and steal every scene he's in. You have Randy and Andy steal every scene they're in. Koechner for his brief moment. Seth Green is fantastic. Dave Sheridan, one of my favorites.
I enjoyed Posehn.
Yeah, Posehn in a bit part. Yeah. Like, it's weird because this is the kind of movie that I feel like if it's made for cameos of all these famous, funny people, but he didn't have that clout right away. So a lot of the funny cameos that would be big-time people, you really just have Posehn and Koechner, I think.
Yeah.
It's so good. I absolutely love this movie. I think it's hilarious.
It is. I think it does a great job of being funny pretty much throughout. There are very few lulls. And at least for me particularly, one of the things, and I do love Marsden, and we'll get to him, but I think Zuckerman was a really solid lead for this movie. He was a great straight guy in this. His relatability in the face of some really unrelatable shenanigans, I think, is what makes the movie work. Without him selling the jokes, you just have a series of bits that might make you laugh, but they don't make you feel uncomfortable. I legitimately feel embarrassed right along with this kid right at the beginning of the movie.
I did want to get to that because this, we talk about Jurassic Park tease. Like,
yeah.
And on TV shows, you have like cold opens that kind of introduce the movie. I feel like this movie has a perfect cold open because
right. It,
I think, is the only like gag and sight gag that doesn't really advance the plot, but it lets you know in those first few minutes this is what you're getting into, and it's fantastic with the pants off, the slipping on the underwear.
That gag itself doesn't necessarily advance the plot, but it does set
up the Jurassic Park tease of the movie.
Right, it does set up his quote-unquote relationship with Ms. Tasty, and it also sets up the gags that will continue with the mom throughout the entirety of the movie, the stepmom, which I think is great, but a lot of those, it hinges on his reactions, because in and of itself, like, the mom was not great comedically. She hung in there and took a condom to the face about as well as anyone can, but it's his awkwardness that really makes you feel terrible for him.
Like, yeah. She's only in like three scenes. He sells them. Like,
they're all brutal. Yeah.
Like, they're just so good. But that's the thing, is like, after that cold open, every gag goes somewhere. It leads somewhere else. And him selling it, the abstinence scene, that's one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen. And his face is so perfect. His character is a little Jason Biggs in American Pie, but not as...
But I think that's an archetypal character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's your virgin, completely out of his element and all this. He's shy. In his heart, he's a good guy. So I think that, yes, it's Biggsian, but I think that in and of itself is just an archetype and a good one to lead a movie like this.
Yeah, and it didn't rely on just cliches and archetypes, because you have Clark Duke, who is essentially Stifler, Chris Klein, and Eddie K. Thomas from American Pie all rolled into one. You have this womanizer like Stifler. You have this guy that everybody likes, like Chris Klein, and then there's a little more depth to him, like the Eddie K. Thomas character, but all delivered in Clark Duke's package, which, when you're writing a cliche like, oh, all the women love him.
It's Clark Duke.
Clark Duke is not what you're thinking of, but he plays it perfectly because he is charming. He is likable. There is that something about him that, like, oh, I could see girls falling for that because he's got this charm about
him. Which is, I think that adds to the movie. You see a guy who's empirically handsome and he's trying to do that and you think, yeah, okay, that's fine. But up until you see it in action, you could totally see Lance as being completely full of shit. He knows nothing. But when he actually does run his game and you see that it works, then that's a little bit of a gag too. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
The dude actually, he walks it. We had talked about, you know, the genre, the teen sex comedy, which it is. But I think it's unfair to just kind of pigeonhole it into...
also a road trip.
Into that. Yeah, because it is a road trip movie as well. So you have a teen sex comedy is not really groundbreaking. But when you are able to marry that with a genre that's not groundbreaking either, I can't think of a lot of road trip teen sex comedies. I can think of a lot of either.
Road trip, I think, counts. Yeah. Special delivery or something where they... it was similar to Road Trip where they send something to the girlfriend and then have to beat it. It was pretty much the same plot as Road Trip.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but those are the only two that I come to mind. And obviously one didn't leave that great of an impact on me.
For sure. What I do so much enjoy this particular genre of being married is you have a character, Ian, going through unimaginable tribulations to visit grandma. And they manage to toe the line between car hitchhiker troubles that she would have if this was a straight, I'm trying to drive from point A to point B, just logistical problems. You have those come up. And then you add in like teen sex kind of drama, like getting distracted getting pooped on. The abstinence dancers, I think, is a great like distraction from that whole bit. So as if like getting laid wasn't a big enough problem for this kid, he's also got to figure out a way to get from Illinois to Tennessee in a stolen car. Shit just keeps mounting for him. The idea of just trying to have sex is like the golden fleece, I guess. And it's not good enough that he's just on a quest for the golden fleece, but literally like the entire world has conspired against him at this point.
I get bad anxiety on movies where it's just like, nothing goes right. Those movies drive me nuts where it's everything that goes wrong can go wrong. They still make progress. Yeah, they have detractions along the way, but I don't feel like this is one thing after another. Maybe because it's paced better, maybe because it constantly advances, and it never seems like anything happens just for the sake of happening. Everything leads to something else.
I'm glad you brought up the anxiety, because as I was watching this, I thought to myself, my girlfriend Sarah would hate this movie. Because she gets anxiety in the same way. She didn't like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because they just kept having problems. And it made her uncomfortable because I don't know if she was projecting those on herself.
I could see that. And I feel like this is different than that.
Because I don't understand it. And I mean, like, to me, it's all conflict. And without conflict, you can't have a movie, or you have maybe a less entertaining one. So I can't get in that headspace. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just interested to hear you mention it as well.
It's hard to explain because I don't have an example off the top of my head, but you have those movies where like, oh, I have to be here at this time.
Right.
And then everything in the world goes wrong to prevent that from happening. And
I have to see my kid's piano recital.
Yeah. Stuff like that, to where things just go wrong for the sake of going wrong, gets to me. I understand conflict and I understand things. This, I feel like, was never too much. Like, I feel like everything fit, everything made sense. Okay, they hit an armadillo or whatever they hit. Oh, the head gasket blows. Like, all of that makes sense.
It didn't seem like cosmic stuff, no.
Yes.
But just the sheer number of things that occurred.
For like a day and a half.
Right, exactly. It literally seemed like, yes, they made progress. It seemed like every 10 miles, they were either running from their life from a redneck, running off the road, meeting the Trapper Keeper car. There was literally always something happening, and I could see, you know, just feeling so bad for the guy that it's tough to get through. I love it. I would like to see more bad things happen to
Ian. I think a lot of it also goes with Clark Duke, who is just along for the ride. It doesn't matter. It could be screwing up Ian's life, but Clark Duke looks at it as like, hey, this is our weekend. This gives us something to talk about Monday when we go back to school. And he's just along for the ride, whereas Plane, Trains, and Automobile, like, it's affecting both of them. And they're both just riddled with this, I have to get here. Whereas this, it's just Clark Duke's just like, whatever. Like, hey, yeah, let's go Rumspringa. Let's go to this abstinence fair. Like, let's just do this stuff. Like, these are the cards. Let's play them. And that the total opposite attitude of Ian. And then Felicia there going through her own stuff along the way. I think Amanda Crew is fantastic here because at no point in the movie is she the target. She's not just there to be a cute girl to pork at the end. Like, that's not her purpose in this movie. There's a lot more to her, and I like that. I like that about her character. I thought she played it great. I really liked her in this movie.
Yeah, I think she was given great stuff to work with in that movie because you're right. She wasn't just this, like, well, we have to have, like, the girl next door, which it's in and of itself is an archetype. She's an archetype the same way Ian is, but they're written and performed well. What I think was maybe my favorite thing about her character is they were okay with having jokes at her expense when she beaves the family of four, when she gets hit in the face with the lollipop. Those are physical bits in nature, but they were great that they did that with a girl. Like, she can be funny too.
And she wasn't used as this object in the movie. They never used her body for anything. She was never like a sex object, which I really like because she's a cute young girl. Like, that would have been easy to do, but they never, the closest thing they get is her beaving that family. But that wasn't done in like a sexual way. It was built up. It made sense how it happened.
And everybody pissed in that thing.
Yeah. So it was funny. In these kind of movies, you have a pretty girl like that. By the common standard, there should be some sort of sex appeal to her. They didn't care about that. So yeah, she's an archetype girl next door, but she's not the girl next door that you're lusting after. Like, obviously, there's feelings from Ian there, but he accepts that it's not going to happen, and he's not lusting over her. He sees her as what she is, his best friend. And I like that angle about it because it was a little different and she wasn't just there to be ogled at.
Right. They all did seem like where all the jokes really kind of advance the story. They all have their arcs and they all do get advanced. And I think my favorite arc was actually Lance's because if you think about it, Ian and Felicia really, like, they liked each other at the beginning of the movie. At the end of the movie, they were just together. You know, he did finally get to have sex, spoiler alert. But at least for Lance, like, he actually, without a lot of melodrama, he actually goes from being, you know, complete, like, womanizing, self-absorbed, to, like, he's an Amish fella now. Because he's found, was it Mary? Was that her name, I think? She's hot as fuck, though. I liked Lance's arc for I don't want to call him a third wheel, but for a third character in the movie, they did a good job with even giving him something to do other than getting Ian in trouble.
Yeah, he was a perfect, I don't want to say sidekick, because he was never, it was his trip as well. And I liked him because he wasn't, like I said, he was a mix of all those American Pie characters, because Stifler was the womanizer but only cared about himself. That wasn't Lance. Yes, he was concerned about getting his stuff for him, but you could tell he cared about Ian. You could tell he was not just wanting him to get laid because, hey, that's what guys do. He felt it would help him.
It would represent for him.
Yes, and he felt that it would help Ian grow as a person. So it wasn't this selfish motivation. And then there was animosity towards Felicia, maybe some jealousy, but could accuse her of twat blocking and that maybe this hasn't happened because you're always around. And so there's that animosity there. And the dynamic was so good with all these. And then with those three so strong, that's what lets the side characters come in and just go nuts.
We've managed to go into deep enough discussions about this movie without just full on whoring ourselves out for James Marsden. But it's going to happen starting now.
I think him and Seth Green.
Yeah.
Because Seth Green was just, hey, you're Amish. It's Seth Green being Seth Green, but it was funny. It worked.
What do you miss about the rest of the world. Sarcasm, because it's lost on my people. Gambling and butt fucking. Yeah. Had a lot of good memories there.
What are computer? Or what's the internet? Oh, it's a string of computer. What is a computer?
It's like a calculator with a screen. Seth Green was very funny in this movie. And he was 100% one-trick pony in this.
Oh, yeah.
But he did that masterfully.
Oh, no, we fixed your car. It's good. We're even. We fixed your car for free. We spent all night working it. You have a working car. We're even.
Yeah, that's just what we live for, is to fix other people's stuff for free.
For nothing, yeah.
Yeah, and right along with Ian, you're really not sure what the hell this guy's deal is. I wasn't surprised to see that from Seth Green.
This was Marsden. I'd never seen this kind of Marsden.
Me either, because up until this point, he had mostly done the X-Men stuff and a few romantic comedies. But
and the Notebook.
And the Notebook, which I'm led to believe was a romantic movie comedy as well. I don't know.
It's hilarious if you love dead old people.
But he's got this character who is a complete and total cheese dick of a character. But you can't help but hold your breath until the next time he shows up on screen, because it's just absolute chaos. And he's kind of like that antagonist in a road movie where you're sort of expecting him to be around every corner waiting for them, and he isn't, and he isn't, and he isn't, until he is, and you're so happy to have him back.
One of Anders's strong point is this is what has made Apatow a lot of money, is Apatow casts funny people and lets them go. It's made Paul Feig's career. You cast funny people, you let them go. And you can tell that a lot of Marsden was just, hey, here's what's going on in this scene. Go nuts. It seems like that was all Seth Green. And Clark Duke, I feel like, had a lot of improv there. So I feel like you get those guys and you just let them go.
It almost felt like, and I'm glad you mentioned improv, because there's one particular scene where it's actually Ian, and he's talking to Seth Green about getting butt-fucked with a roll of quarters.
Yeah.
And that, to me, and maybe it was written,
he's going to go to the bank.
He's going
to
wait in line.
He's going to cash in a 10, and he's going to find me.
Yeah, like that, I don't know. Maybe I'm giving him more credit and not giving enough credit to the writers. But the delivery of that was so good that it made you think that it was all improv. And there are a lot of scenes like that. The car scene with Rex and Ian when he's talking about getting gay. Yeah. That's
every insult
too.
That Marsden spits out. Any scene with Clark Duke and Seth Green together. Anything with Andy and Randy. I feel like they didn't have lines. It was just, here's what you guys do. Hey, you have a phone number? Oh, you don't? And maybe,
like, they were playing improv games.
Yeah, like maybe.
But they were the only two playing.
Maybe I'm not giving him enough. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit for letting them improv. And maybe a lot more of it's written, but it was written so naturally that it seems like improv.
And that's it. It's either great writing, because it seemed that it was very natural. It's either great acting, because it didn't come off like they were reading from a script and saying lines. Or it is great acting because it's improv. Either way, like, the movie did feel organic. I mean, none of that shit's ever happened to me. But at no point did I think, like, this is some kind of completely outrageous movie that it's way too much.
I rewatched it, but I got the unrated version. And the unrated version has a lot of extra stuff thrown in. Some of the extended scenes that are improv, they'll let them go until they cut, and it's weird. So if you haven't seen the rated version, watch it first. There's a couple Clark Duke scenes, and then the Clark Duke and Seth Green in the buggy, like, that goes on for a while until they're just laughing, and then it goes to a different cut and ends when they're laughing. So I mean, you could tell there was a lot of improv going on, and it worked. Even at the end, you know, you get to Ms. Tasty. And there's a plot. It's not just, oh, there's something else going on here.
It would have been very easy for her to be a dude.
Yeah.
And they kind of gave you that, I don't know, red herring, I guess, with the other guy. Yeah. Or, you know, he could have just, like, decided not to have sex with her. But because it was a carjacking.
And Dave Sheridan. I think Dave Sheridan is one of the most underrated, underappreciated comedic actors ever. This dude, anything he's in, he's hilarious in. The jail scene, I think, is hilarious with Felicia and the ladies.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so funny. But the climax of this movie is one of the better. I think of, like, these kind of movies, like Crazy
Stupid Love?
Yes, Crazy Stupid Love. It's not the climax, but the scene in the backyard with Kevin Bacon and Steve Carell, like, this feels like that because there's so much going on. And you've had all these characters, and some of them have just been side characters, but now everything comes together.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like, oh, there's no reason for all of these characters to be together. You're thinking, oh, why is this just now happening? Like, all of these characters belong in the same place.
Right. You see Andy and Randy. Andy and Randy, like, it's not just two guys that, oh, they just kind of disappeared from this movie. No, they were there the whole time, and this is why they were there.
It makes sense why they're there.
Yeah, you've got corn-fed
Abraham.
Yeah, right. The recently departed Abraham. You see, because the Google Maps, which is referenced.
It's referenced that, earlier.
Right.
Where are the Google Maps? In my pants.
In the trailer, right. So everything makes sense, like, why all these characters are here at that particular point, and it is great to kind of...
And my favorite thing about the end is that at the end, when the cop comes in,
yeah,
he feels like a character that's been there the whole movie because he's just as nuts as everything else. Like, he's in this one scene, but it's hilarious. And he goes all out. And it's like, how are you only in this section of the movie? It's not like he was a callback. He feels like a callback.
Right, this cop that's been chasing him the whole time.
Yeah, he feels like somebody who this is his moment to shine.
But I'm finally going to get this, but no, this is Senior Donut.
The big Mexican won't go down. Like, just that whole scene, the tasering him. And
yeah.
I love that, the climax of this movie. And that cop comes in for one scene and is just so funny. And he feels like a bigger character than he is. I just love it. We were totally banging that chick. Yeah, you mentioned that.
Maybe it's just recently that it's hard to not watch this movie, specifically with Abraham, who I don't think I'd ever seen in anything else. And in fairness, the only episode I've seen with him in Walking Dead, spoiler alert, is the last one he's in. I had no idea who the guy was. I was just watching Sex Drive. I was like, oh, shit, that's that guy.
It's Michael Cudlitz. He's one of those actors that you see him on Walking Dead, and that's how you know him.
Right.
But then you watch stuff you've seen before, and it's like, oh, hey, that's him.
I've seen that handlebar mustache before. It's a brilliant piece of facial hair, if I do say so myself. It's hard not to see, like, the irony of his character chasing down Lance, trying to beat him to death with a baseball bat. It's like, boy, the shoe is on the other foot. No, it's just, it's symmetry, basically.
Eight years, it's foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. People talk about, like, oh, well, if you watch the opening credits of Walking Dead, you knew who was going to die. All right, well, yeah, if you watch Sex Drive, you also knew who was going to die. And like, the armadillo took it like a champ.
The armadillo took it like a champ. Katrina Bowden, we haven't mentioned. She's Ms. Tasty. I swore Katrina Bowden was going to be this big star. She was Ceri on 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Not a big part, but was great in everything and served her purpose. And then she had, like, this.
Tucker and Dale.
Yeah. And I thought, like, oh, she's going to be this bigger star. Cause she's gorgeous. She's funny. She seems competent enough. But she hasn't, unless I'm missing something.
I don't think so. Piranha 3 Double D. I think, unfortunately for her, she is just very attractive. And maybe that's her being typecast. She can only play basically like the hot airhead. Although she wasn't an airhead in this. She was really the brains behind the carjacking operation. And I thought in the limited time she was on the screen, I thought she did a pretty good job. And yeah, she seems like somebody that probably should have been in a lot more things. But for whatever reason, maybe it's just the things that she chooses, they end up being funny more often than not.
She was. I really liked Tucker and Dale.
Yeah.
Thought she was great in that.
I know you didn't love the 3 Double D as much.
Oh, no, at all.
But, you know, she picks stuff like that. Scary Movie 5, Movie 43. She's doing comedies, and she is not doing safe comedies, and perhaps that's what's done it. But, I mean...
But you know, it's she's still young-ish. Like, I remember thinking...
Yeah.
Catherine Waterston when I watched The Babysitters in, like, 2004 or whatever. Thought she was going to be a big star. But
if there's anything we know about women in Hollywood, it's usually later in their career that they really start to thrive.
They let them age, and then they let them mature.
Then they give them those prime roles.
Yeah. No, but like Katherine Waterston, I thought she was going to be a star. And then like it took like 10 or 11 years, and now she is getting all these major, major roles. So it's like, if you'd listened to me earlier.
Well, I mean, really, this movie, I wouldn't say was really a star launcher for anyone.
No.
I mean, I think it maybe showed people that Marsden could do comedies, and he's done comedies since then, and he's been great. But, I mean, certainly, like, Zuckerman, he's worked a lot.
Nothing really that you'd...
Yeah, nothing huge. I mean, Clark Duke's been around
but nothing
in more
huge.
Of Sean Anders' stuff. The Hot Tub Time Machine, I, you know, he was...
He was great in that,
yeah,
but then,
yeah,
like, that hasn't launched him...
No,
anywhere.
Not really.
And a crew has been in. She's on Silicon Valley now, being criminally underused. But
in my research for this, I saw that Marsden's on Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
Which I haven't watched
yet.
Oh,
he's fantastic on Westworld.
I would imagine. This movie, I think, specifically made me like a honk for Marsden. Like, I'll
this
watch
anything
he does.
This was the McAvoy turn
now.
For Marsden for me.
But I didn't hate him before that.
I.
Can you have a McAvoy turn?
Yeah,
without having
I
like
didn't
that.
Like him. I didn't like him.
But did you hate him?
I think. I mean, I didn't. He was my least favorite part of the X-Men movies.
More so than Halle Berry.
Yeah, because he had more to do. Like, he was more front and center.
Not in the second one.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like him.
Okay.
And then he was okay in Superman Returns because I liked that he was the other guy. And he wasn't a bad guy. Like, I liked that there was that conflict there. And that he was the same thing in The Notebook as well. I haven't seen it, but I've heard he's like...
I haven't either.
We should do that for Valentine's Day. But, like, after Sex Drive, he went
should
on...
Should we do an episode without having seen the movie?
Yes.
And just be like, I imagine this is what happens.
Yes. Death at a Funeral, where he was the comedic...
Yeah.
He was the Alan Tudyk role.
Yes.
And he was great. Hop, which was a comedy that he led.
I did not see that.
I have so many times.
Bachelorette. He was good in.
Small Apartments, like a run on 30 Rock. Like
great on Anchorman, too.
He transitioned.
He's picked cool stuff to do. I mean, even if it wasn't necessarily comedies, I like Two Guns. That was kind of a cool movie. Robot and Frank, he had a small part in that. That was cool. I didn't love the Straw Dogs remake. But that was certainly something different for him. He's not doing the same things. He's doing a lot of varied
shit. He could have made a life. He could have made a career just doing stuff like 27 Dresses.
He could have been this decade's McDreamy, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
McDreamy still is McDreamy.
Well, yeah, I guess.
But he could have just made a career doing movies like 27 Dresses.
Right, yeah.
And he didn't, which I admire. Like, I appreciate that about him. And he is really good on Westworld. But yeah, it all started with this. This was... Trying to think, the first McAvoy turn on record is Chris
David
Evans.
McAvoy.
No, it's Chris Evans in Sunshine, years before McAvoy made the McAvoy turn. But I think he might be the second McAvoy turn.
2008 does predate the podcast, so it's entirely possible it could be. If we can't find somebody else to give it to, maybe we'll give it to him like Lifetime Achievement McAvoy.
Yeah, because it would have been Evans, and then I think this, and then I think McAvoy was the third one. So the McAvoy turn is named after the third
guy, because that happens
or actually,
often.
Did Channing Tatum make the McAvoy turn before?
I'm not sure if he's officially been awarded that prize.
Oh, he absolutely was, because I hated him until 21 Jump Street. Now I love
him. I don't know that we were giving
I don't
that
think
award
I made
then.
It an official, but
yeah.
I'm just talking personally, like who's made the McAvoy turn for me. And I think of those four off the top of my head. And McAvoy might have been the last one to do it.
I mean, I can think of people that came after that we gave the awards to, but nothing in the dark days. But I would agree that I think this movie, for me, made me a fan of him to where even that, was it Enchanted? Was that the movie?
The Amy Adams movie?
Yeah. He's good in that. I mean, that's not a movie for me.
No, but she's worth watching for that. She's amazing in that movie.
That's what she's like meant to do, and she does it well. But I enjoy watching Marsden because he's just a complete idiot.
That's charming, yeah.
Yeah, and he's great. He does that idiot with aplomb. And I would say this entire movie, Sex Drive, was done with aplomb as well. Let us know what you think.
Is Sex Drive one of the best comedies of the last 15 years? I say yes.
Yeah, I guess I kind of buried that. That is a super strong statement. It's a hot take Dave came out with.
I don't think it's a hot take. I'll stand by it. Like, I think it's one of the best.
I'm not saying it's a hot take because you don't mean it. I'm saying that is a statement that has some weight to it. One of the best comedies within the last 15 years.
I do.
Yeah, okay. And that's why it's a hot take. It's controversial. If you agree or disagree, if you think, you know, this was the movie that you fell in love with James Marsden, we'd love to hear about it. Movies on up at gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, at moviesonup on the Twitter. Next week is our Thanksgiving episode.
And when you think Thanksgiving, you think cowboys.
Well, I think what happens is you think Indians, because it was the Native Americans that gave us food for Thanksgiving, and us, I mean the pilgrims and the settlers. We didn't want to be culturally insensitive and do like movies featuring our favorite Native Americans. So we did the antithesis of Indians. We did cowboys.
For Thanksgiving.
Right. Because whatever. I mean, nothing says Happy Turkey Day like a good old-fashioned cowboy. Right. Yeah. So that's next week, our favorite cowboy movies. And then we head into December is kind of fast approaching, and that's kind of a fun month for us. We've sort of referenced the McAvoy Award a couple times, or at least the action that leads to the award. Now, of course, that is the Uppy Awards, which are coming up in December. We'll do some Christmas-themed episodes, which aren't necessarily Christmas movies, but Christmas movies that you don't consider Christmas. I don't know.
Maybe.
Hipster Christmas movies. But December is usually, December and January are actually pretty fun months. I think like the back quarter of the year, coming off Halloween, November kind of gets back to a little bit of regular business. And then we kind of switch things up again in December and do our award stuff, our end of the year stuff. So we've got some stuff coming up on the horizon. So hope you dig that. If you have any nominations or any awards that you'd like to see us hand out, even a category for the Uppies, we're certainly all ears because we're going to be doing that here sooner than later. So let us know, moviesonup@gmail.com. And until next week,
keep it up.